Hello, welcome to the Catholic Link podcast, the podcast for busy Catholics. I'm your host, Father George Elliott, and today I'm joined by Dr. Stacy Trisenkos. Dr. Trisenkos is an adjunct professor of science and theology in the Catholic Studies program at Seton Hall University, in the undergraduate and graduate programs at Holy Apostles College and Seminary, and in the science department at Belmont Abbey College. She is a fellow for Bishop Robert Barron's Word on Fire Institute and is the author of Particles of Faith, Science Was Born of Christianity, Behold It as I, and 20 Answers, Bioethics. She earned a PhD in chemistry from Penn State University and previously worked as a research chemist at DuPont. After becoming Catholic, she earned two MA degrees in dogmatic theology and systematic philosophy from Holy Apostles College and Seminary. In 2024, she began a doctoral program in philosophy at St. Patrick's Pontifical University in Maynooth, Ireland. She is the wife of Jose Trisenkos and the mother of seven. Stacy, welcome to the show.
Hi, Father Elliott. It's great to be here talking with you.
It is good to have you on the show. It's funny, you know, we have been on several podcasts together because we co-wrote Behold It as I, and so it's kind of fun to be able to now host you on the Catholic Link podcast. So this is good. I'm looking forward to this conversation. And we're talking because you actually just published a recent book called IVF is Not the Way, right? And you dedicated it to your aunt. And I'm interested, why was it that you dedicated the book to your aunt?
Well, when I was thinking about the pain of infertility, my aunt is the first person that came to mind because she's been such an influence on me my entire life. I mean, I remember as a little child seeing these foster children that she and her husband always had with her. So my Aunt Dana is my mother's sister. And she's one of these young women who grew up and all she wanted to do was get married and be a mother. Being a mother was her dream. Their first child that she was pregnant with after getting married, they lost. They lost the baby. And then when they were doing the procedure to clean out the uterus, it was punctured and it rendered her definitively infertile for the rest of her life. And I didn't really know all this till I was older, but what my aunt and uncle did is not only did they adopt two children that they love dearly who are adults now, they opened their home in Texas as foster parents. And they went on to foster over 100 children. And it was during a time which it was already beginning in those days where the foster parents stayed in touch with the children even after they were adopted because the Texas departments decided that was best for the children to have that continuity because some of them would stay in my aunt and uncle's home for years. And so my aunt and uncle, every Christmas, birthdays throughout the year, when these children grew up, got married, had their own kids, they're flooded with cards, phone calls. They have uncountable numbers of grandchildren, if you will, that are part of their life now. Their life is abundantly full of children and grandchildren because of all these foster kids, children whose lives they changed. And they're very full now. In the Psalms, it says that grandchildren are the jewels of heaven. They're going to have many jewels. They've been married over 60 years and are both older now. And just what a life. You know, I thought that is a great testimony to someone who had the hardest pain of infertility and opened their hearts to God's will and what God had in store for them. And it took them in a direction I don't think they would have ever planned to go, but they did. And it was a blessing, a huge blessing to us too, because we got to see all those children and it really instilled in me a love for the gift of life.
Yeah, no, that's so cool. I think a lot of people think to themselves like, well, what's wrong with IVF, right? I mean, like, okay, we're Catholic, we're pro-life, life is a good thing. IVF makes babies. Yeah. And so, you know, why is there a problem with IVF?
And here's the answer, and I know you know it. The answer is because it dissociates the unitive and the procreative aspect of the conjugal act. There, I said it. Right. Now, what does that mean? A lot of people would, yeah, they look at you like, and
okay,
what? That's the theological terminology. Let me put it in a little bit more familiar words. the church says you can't separate life giving from love making. But even still, and this is what I was dealing with writing this book, people are still going to look at you and say, so what? I mean, go out there on the street and say, don't separate life giving from love making. And people will be like, what? Whatever. If the couple's married, they can do what they want. If the couple's not married, a woman wants a baby on her own, she can do what she wants. That's the way we've come to view human life and the sanctity of marriage in our culture. And that's why this argument from the church is so difficult to make. A lot of people start with all the extra embryos that are in freezers who are being treated inhumanely, frankly. And that is one argument. But truthfully, the embryos who are dying in the cryogenic storage tanks, that's a consequence of not following the truth in the first place, which is the sanctity of marriage and the dignity of human life.
Yeah. You know, in society, I have to confess, I haven't had a chance to read your book yet, but, you know, in society, where do you think that root of kind of the separation of procreation and the sexual act really started? Like, where does that come from?
Oh, and it goes so far back. It goes back to people starting to not believe in God. And I lay out a 10-step argument, 10 premises, making the argument, and I made the argument for each premise in the book. And I know that's heavy, but I started with God exists, because that's where we really started to lose this idea. Not just God exists, but the one and triune God of Christianity, that God is Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, three persons, one God. Because from that revelation, it was a revelation, it wasn't something we could have figured out, Christ had to tell us this, we learned about ourselves. We learned what Aristotle said, you know, there's a rational soul for man has intellect, but Aquinas really turned that into, that's how we understand being made in the image and likeness of God. Our rational soul is the source of our powers, spiritual powers of intellect and will. So we're more than just a body. We are body and rational soul united. And because of this spiritual aspect of us, we can make decisions, we can practice virtue, we can seek the good, and we are in control of that because of our free will. But, and that is then where our dignity comes from. And so if you don't understand all of that about the person, you don't understand what it means for two persons to unite as one in marriage. And if you don't understand that, then you don't understand why the bringing into existence in cooperation with God of a new human life, a baby, is so important to be done within the bodily and spiritual union of marriage. So it goes all the way back to a rejection of God, the way I see it.
Yeah. You know, something whenever I speak to people about this, that strikes them a lot is on one side saying that, look, none of us really want to think about our parents making love, but we're all very happy to know that we were made in an act of love.
Yes.
Right. Like, you know, I think it actually gives kind of identity issues to a person to think to themselves that, like, well, when was I created? Like, well, that time whenever that, you know, that tech put me in a petri dish, or, you know, you know, mix me up in a petri dish. Like, man, that's got to do something very deep to a person's, like, sense of identity, you know, that no, like, if we really believe that we are loved by God, and created for love, then, you know, coming out of an act of love is really the situation that should happen. Right. But then also one of the things that helps people a lot is the idea that, hey, you know what, actually marriage, bringing forth children, is one of these things that gives great meaning to a marriage, right? And it actually gives great meaning even to the sexual act itself, that, like, oh yeah, this is something that could bring forth a child, right? Mm-hmm. It's a kind of risk that the parents take. Obviously, it's a beautiful risk. It's a good thing. Children are wonderful. But also, it's a risk, right? Like, oh yeah, we may bring in a lot of responsibility into our lives by this act, right? And we're choosing to do this together. I think people then kind of get hooked up and they say, like, well, yeah, but these people don't have this opportunity, right? These people who perhaps are struggling with infertility or whatever it may be, they're not going to have that opportunity. What would you respond to that? Like, what is the loving Christian way, but also, true Christian way to respond to that?
The church's teaching here is all about the rights of a child. And like you said, every one of us is a child. And we may have had our rights violated if we weren't born of that kind of love between loving mother and father committed in marriage. We may not have been born that way or conceived that way, but we had a right to be. And that's what the church is saying here. All children have the right to be born of the most perfect loving union between their parents that is possible for a human to undergo. Okay. So you got a couple who desires all of that. They're 100% on board. The church calls this the theologians call this the simple case. It's when the love between the couple is not an issue. We're not talking about unmarried people. We're not talking about homosexual couple. We're talking about a loving, sanctified, married couple. And they want to do this one act, which is going to separate the life-giving from the love-making just this one time so they can have that baby they dream of. The church has considered that question and said definitively no, because the child has a right to be born of the marital love. You can't violate the child's rights by using IVF, even in that situation. And so what we're being asked to do here is consider the rights of the child first and foremost before the wants and desires of the parents. Even though what the parents are desiring is good, they're desiring a child, which is always good, the supreme gift of marriage. But if that conception in love, in bodily unity, is shut off to you, what we're asked to do then is to find out from God where else we're being directed, like my aunt and uncle did. And that is very difficult. You can hear the hesitation in my voice, I think, because that's a hard thing to look at someone in that situation and say out loud that infertility might be a gift, that your infertility is a gift. It's a bitter gift, but it's a gift. That's hard to say out loud. And that is the teaching of the church. And all I can say to that as a woman in my 50s now with children and grandchildren, so many times I had to follow hard teachings of the church. I'm a convert, as you know. I had to change everything I thought I knew. And I understand now, looking back, that when I followed the hardest teachings, I received the greatest blessings. I just couldn't see it at the time.
Yeah. You know, kind of with that statement that you were saying, that, you know, essentially children are gifts, I think sometimes people misunderstand what's really being said there, right? So something that is a gift is something that you necessarily do not buy for yourself, right? It's something that you do not get to say, I want this, I want it at this time, and I want it like this, right? Mm-hmm. In my experience, whenever I'm talking to people, they often, if they're very pro IVF, they oftentimes have a kind of what I like to refer to as a commodification of children, right? So a commodity is something that one can purchase and you can choose and you can either have it or you cannot have it. And ultimately a commodity is an object, right? It's something that we can buy, right? That's actually the problem with slavery, is that you can buy and sell slaves. You can get them when you want, you can get rid of them when you don't want them.
Exactly. Right?
This is not something that's a problem in our culture exclusively with IVF, right? I think that really contraception also creates a kind of commodification of children, that like, oh yeah, now I'm having children, now I'm not, or I want a child now, so I'm going to stop taking my contraception so that I can have one now, you know? And even if I'm really honest, I think there's that tendency with couples who even use NFP, right? So they're using legitimate means to have or to not have children, but they'll say something along the lines of like, well, we're trying to have a child now. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of one of those, like, well, you know, the whole like trying to have a child shouldn't actually be the case. perhaps ever, right? It should just be that, like, no, we're living the married life. And the fruit of that is that sometimes you have a child, right? And then maybe at certain times they're trying not to have a child because it just would not be a good time, would not be a good thing for the child, would not be a good thing for the family, would not be a good thing for the couple. But yeah, that deeper understanding of the commodification of children actually, I think is like IVF is the reasonable conclusion of that part of our culture. And so, you know, for you, what do you think is, or do you, is there anything we can do to help to reduce that commodification of children in the culture?
Just by speaking up about the dignity of life. I mean, contraception is the opposite of IVF in the sense that IVF shuts out the life. It shuts out the love making part of the unity. Contraception shuts out the life giving part of the unity. So they're two sides of the same coin. And the only way I know how to address this big problem, you know, it's you can't just say don't put embryos in freezers, which is awful. And we have 1 to 4 million of them in the United States alone right now. That's a different topic. But the only way to really get at this, and thus the title IVF is not the way, is to keep evangelizing to people about their own inherent dignity. I think a person, a mother, a potential mother and father, any person needs to get around that, his or her head around the fact that you are a child. You may have had your rights violated in the way you were conceived. You may not. You may have had your rights violated as you were growing up if your parents weren't perfect parents, which I think is mostly the case. But you recognize that you had your rights violated. But what do we do when rights are violated? We turn toward the good and try to restore what was lost. And so that's why it's so beautiful what my aunt and uncle did. All those foster children, what they were doing was taking children whose rights were violated because they were born into a family that couldn't raise them. And some of them chose the loving option of adoption, but it's loving because the people, the foster parents and the adoptive parents, they're turning back towards the good, what was lost. They're trying to restore that loving mother and father and family to the child. That's why it's so beautiful. And so if we want to stop commoditizing, we have to stop seeing people as objects, whether it's your husband or wife and you're using contraception, or whether it's IVF and you want to commoditize each other. I need your sperm. I need your eggs. Let's give it to the doctor and let them make our child. Don't commoditize each other and don't commoditize children. And the title is from the Didache, which says the way of life is love of God and love of neighbor. And we love God and neighbor by recognizing the human dignity that we all have made in the image and likeness of God. So I get very foundational in the book. I think you have to. So yeah.
Excellent. You're doing a ton really to work on that dignity of the human person, working with bioethics and all of that. And so where can people find your book? And then also where can they find other things that you're working on?
The book is with Sophia Institute Press, and it is an audio book. So if you're like me and you like to take walks or drive and listen, I read the whole thing out loud at 5 a.m. in the morning, every morning for 2 weeks while my children were asleep. You can find me on Substack now. I have a Substack called God and Elements, where I'm writing about my work in philosophy and bioethics and theology as a scientist and a mother. And then I also favor Facebook among the social media outlets, so you can find me there.
This has been the Catholic Link Podcast, the podcast for busy Catholics. I've been joined by Dr. Stacy Trisenkos. I'm Father George Elliott. If you'd like to find more great shareable content by Catholics for Catholics, check out catholic-link.org. Thanks for joining, and God bless.